can see, I'm all ready to go on a journey. We are hiking. We are going to ascend. That is what Ridgeview Christian Church is doing right now. And I come out all ready to go hiking, wearing very similar to what I normally would wear. I've got my boots. I've got my pants that so effortlessly turn into shorts with just the zip of the zipper. I am ready to go on a journey too, because I am showing us that the sermons are now going on the journey as well. We've been on this Ascend campaign. We are on trail marker card, what, 8 or 9, something like that. What, you got the number written on the cards in front of you. But now the sermons are going to be going on the Ascend campaign as well. As I carry this heavy load, I'd like to talk about a man who carried an even heavier load up a mountain. I have hiked with this pack before, weighted down actually properly. I just threw random junk in this to make it look full. As I think about hiking, sometimes you get some pretty heavy loads, though. And there's a man, though, who carried an even bigger burden up a mountain. And you might think I'm talking about Jesus. That's not what we're talking about today with the sermon. We're talking about someone who carried not necessarily as much the physical burden, but a more of an emotional burden that he had to carry. Jesus carried both emotional and physical, and he is the center point of every story in the Bible. We're going to talk more about someone who's named more often in the story. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 22 today, as Abraham climbed a mountain. This burden was very heavy that he had to carry, and we will read about it right now out of Genesis chapter 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hands the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, "My father?" He said, "Here I am, my son." He said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. Now I'm going to take off this pack because I don't want to carry this burden throughout the sermon. But Abraham carried that burden for days as he went up the mountain with his son. A burden that is a burden that I don't know if any of us can imagine carrying. We can think about it. We can think about what it might be like to lose a child. Some of us may have experienced that. But to be told directly, "Go take this child's life, this child that you waited literally your entire life for." Remember, Abraham and Sarah, they suffered infertility, which the people I know that have suffered that, it hurts. And they suffered it longer than anyone we know has ever suffered that. How old was Abraham when they had their child? Does anyone remember that? 100 years old. That's a long time to go waiting for when God has actually specifically told you, you are going to have this child. And not just that, you're going to have this child, and through this child, you are going to have offspring as numerous as the sands of the seashore. You are going to have so many children, you literally cannot count them, Abraham. And Abraham's going, "We're old." And you know what? I think it's safe for anyone in this room to call them old, even. They're older than anybody in this room, even. They were an old couple, and they suffered for a long time. One time they tried to take matters into their own hands, and they were waiting around so long, Abraham went and fathered a son through another woman, and God said, "That's not the promise I made. You're going to have you as a couple, you, Abraham and Sarah, you're going to have a child. That's how it's going to work." And after it was physically impossible for them to have a child, they had a child. Finally, they did. 100 years old. Now, I don't know about all of you with children, but my experience is pretty much you don't sleep the first year of life of a newborn baby, right? You may sleep a few hours here and there, but you don't sleep a lot, right? And I think that's on purpose because God purposefully wants us to not have good memories of the first year of a child's life because you start to have like terrible flashbacks with kid number two or three or more about, I forgot all about how terrible this experience was. Now it's a beautiful experience, right? And it's amazing, but there are details that are not as much fun along the way, and it is amazing. But then Abraham has this child. He's 100 years old, and he has this kid. Probably doesn't sleep for a year as a 100-year-old. Maybe he wasn't sleeping much anyway because he's 100 years old. I don't know. But he's got this promised child finally. The child that's supposed to bless every family in the world is what God has covenanted with Abraham. And then God asks the imaginable. But he doesn't ask the unimaginable. I said imaginable, the unimaginable. He doesn't ask, though. He demands. He doesn't say, hey, Abe, you know that son? You think you might want to go out and kill him? I don't think Abraham would have done it that way, right? He says, Abraham, yes, Lord. You know that son you love? The son that at this point is not just a newborn baby you hardly know. I mean, you love him as a newborn baby, but he's old enough to have a relationship with. He's old enough to make reasoning decisions about, hey, I see wood and fire. Where's the animal that we're going to slaughter? He can think through logical conclusions, which means he's not just a toddler. He's old enough to carry the wood and things like that. You know this boy. You've raised this boy. I want you to go take him up on a mountain, spend the next few days with him climbing to the peak, and then I want you to kill him in my honor. That's what sacrifice means. He said, I want you to go kill him in my honor. And I don't know about you, but I probably would have questioned that command, right? Like, I would have been like, you want me to do what? I'm sure that's in there. We know Abraham was a man of faith, but I'm pretty confident that that part of the story just wasn't included. Any rational human would have at least asked, are you sure? And he asked, do you want me to do what? And that moves forward in the story. Now, most of us know the end of the story, right? Maybe not everyone in the room, but most of us know the end of the story, and it doesn't turn out as scary as it seems, but it's still a scary story along the way. And Abraham's story, it's really early in the Bible. It's before the Ten Commandments with, like, thou shalt not kill, but most people understand don't kill people, right? And not just that, but God is the same yesterday and today and forever, which means that Jesus in the New Testament is the same God as the God of the Old Testament, which when Jesus said, love the little children, let the little children come to me, he said things like, if you cause a little one to stumble, then it's better that a millstone was tied around your neck and you were thrown into the sea. God loves children. But here he is saying, hey, take your only child and kill him. And so Abraham, at some level, had to know this is wrong. He had to, I mean, emotionally he's feeling this is not okay. Mentally, he's cognitively probably thinking this is not okay. And he's thinking, you want me to do what? Now, I may not have a promised child that I waited 100 years for. I've read enough of the Bible to know that if I ever think there's a supernatural experience telling me to slaughter one of my children, that's not God and I should go seek help. But Abraham says, you want me to do what? And maybe sometimes we ask, maybe not as bad as go kill your only child, but we get asked some things quite often by God, or he calls us to some things. We're reading through Scripture, and we understand some things, and we get to those points, and we say, you want me to do what? Have you ever thought God is prompting you to do something? You're reading something in Scripture, and you go, what? You want me to do what? Have you ever had that thought? Or maybe you've not cognitively made that thought only because you're just trying to hide the fact that you're not that normal of a human, and so, of course, you would never think God's wanting me to do something hard. And so you don't ask, you want me to do what? But that's really what you're thinking in your heart of hearts is, seriously, God, you want me to do what? Really? And we ask that often. The proverbial one that I could think of the most immediately is, it's happened here at Ridgeview Christian Church before. A family has a career and things like that, and they get a calling to go on the mission field, and they go, you want me to do what? Like, give up what I've got going on here, it's a good thing. And then maybe a family goes and joins a children's home and starts serving as a parent there. That's happened here at Ridgeview. We know other people who've gone off into the missions field from Ridgeview, and they've gone, it's great now they're doing these things, but I'm sure at the initial start, at some point they asked, what? Where am I going? I mean, they've probably thought that before. Maybe another one, this one, maybe not you're being called to missions thing, but maybe this is one that's more home for everybody, and this actually is in the Bible. God sometimes asks Christians to give up control of their money by placing it in his hands. maybe just a piece of, maybe like 10% of it to a church and put that in the hands of the control of the church and going, you want me to do what? You want me to not be in control of my money? Really? Like, we might sometimes ask God that if we're serious. Other times, God asks Christians maybe to give up their time. Like, maybe it's just a few hours to prepare and teach a Sunday school, but then you're thinking, you want me to do what? I've seen what happens. People don't ever get out of Sunday school rotations. I don't know if I should ever do that. And you're getting prompted, and you go, you want me to do what? Seriously? Maybe it's something big, like God asking you to delay a trip by a day or get back earlier a day so you can help out with something at church, and you're going, you want me to do what? That's my vacation. That's my thing. I earned this paid time off. I'm not coming back early here. Maybe it's do something as scary as coming to church on a day that's not a Sunday. And maybe come under a Saturday thing or a work day, or maybe help out with Sober Recovery on Thursdays, or maybe come in during the week and buy food for the Sunday morning breakfast, and you're thinking, that's my time. You want me to do what? Really? You want me to do that? God sometimes asks Christians to sell their possessions so that another Christian doesn't have to do without. And you're going, you want me to do what? Really? God sometimes asks Christians to give up the safety of not having to feel like one of those Christians who shares the gospel in weird ways. And God says, actually, yeah, I want you to go share the gospel. It's okay to feel like one of those weird Christians. And you're going, you want me to do what? Seriously? God sometimes asks people to give up their reliance on what they can see and hear and feel and touch now and say, hey, actually, you should have some faith in a God who exists and is supernatural. And maybe not to Christians, because hopefully they have already made this jump. I guess they have to be a Christian. But maybe somebody asks the heir, you want me to do what? Really? Have faith in something like that? God sometimes asks Christians to give up a luxury of like eating out once or twice less a week, or maybe take a step back from that super-duper mega sports package where you could watch 15,000 channels at once, all different sports games and everything, or maybe saying take a step back from the unlimited cell phone data plan so that this Christian can have more room in the budget, or that you could be more generous, that you could actually have control over your finances. And you ask, you really want me to do that? You want me to do what? That sounds ridiculous. Maybe God is asking a Christian to give up a little bit on what they have determined success is and say, you need to sell that car. You don't need to buy that car. You don't need that big of a house. This career you can do better ministry in, so it may not pay as much, but stay with this career. Don't build bigger and bigger barns. And you might ask, you want me to do what? It's hard to give up our things. There are things, right? Like, we earn them. There are stuff. It's what I have done. I have traded my time and life in order to get these things. These things, therefore, are my life. It's understandable to not want to give up those things or our time. I get it. For Abraham, it makes perfect sense, right? To ask, you want me to do what? Maybe he didn't ask that question. He probably did. I'll admit that even though with something less than your promised son that you love, who's going to change the whole world and basically become a superhero, even though he messes up a couple times if you read the story, but he's basically going to be a superhero that carries on the covenant, it still makes sense for us to ask, you want me to do what? God, this is mine. God, I worked hard for this. God, how would I be able to provide for my family? God, how would I restore my image? God, how could you replace my son? And yet we see Abraham raise the knife up in the air, and he's about to go through with it. Even though Abraham had a better place than many of us to question God on things, sacrificing his son, and too often it's just sacrifice our stuff, Abraham was ready and able to go through with God's request. Why was he able to go through with God's request? What did he know about the situation? God's in control. There's a specific thing about God's control that I'm asking. His son even asks him, he says, hey, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham knew the answer, right? But what did Abraham answer? God will provide. That's the key turning point in the story, is that Abraham knew that God would provide. Here's the rest of the story. Genesis 22, I'll reread verse 10, and we'll finish the story. It says, then Abraham reached out his hand, took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, "Here I am." He said, thankfully, he said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked. Behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." So we ask God, "You want me to do what?" Yeah, God will provide. "You want me to do what?" God provides. "You want me to do that?" Yeah, God provides. "You seriously want me to do this?" God provides. What's the big deal? That might be what Abraham would ask us, maybe. I mean, it's hard sometimes, but the answer is, yeah, God provides. God takes care of these things. "You want me to give up something?" Well, God provides. "You want Ridgeview Christian Church to ask its members to raise $500,000 and then enter into a building project? That's way more money than that. Are you crazy?" You know what's more crazy? It's thinking God doesn't provide. God provides. The journey of generosity is the safest ground we could walk on because God provides. It may not be easy. It might not always be fun. It might look like there's treacherous. It might get dark and scary sometimes, but God provides along the journey. We don't need to fear giving anything up if it's what God is asking us to give up, because God provides, and he can give back even more. And so maybe God's asking you to give up something eventually at the end of this campaign for the community of Ridgeview Christian Church so that we can be more generous with each other, be more generous with people who come into this building, be more generous with our community. And so then God's going to provide. It'll be okay. Maybe it's not has nothing to do with this campaign. Maybe it has nothing to do with that. And it's just God's going to provide because he wants you to be a generous person. God is a giver, and that means his children should be givers, because we want to be like our Father in heaven, and we should be more generous, and we don't have to fear giving up things and being more generous things because God provides. Jesus said to consider the lilies. Why? Why did Jesus say, "Don't be anxious, look at plants"? Because God provides. He provides for plants. He provides for the sparrow. He's given you his son. Why would he not provide more than that? Even if God would not have stopped Abraham and Abraham went through with killing his son, Abraham didn't need to fear that. Why? Because God provides, and God could have actually raised his son from the dead, right? You don't need to be afraid of giving things away when you're dealing with a God who can literally raise things from the dead. You don't have to fear. The journey of generosity is safe because God provides. And what's cool is we know the whole story, right? Like we don't just have Genesis chapter 22. We've got like all the way up to the New Testament, right? We've got the whole story. We know that God didn't just provide a ram on that day. We know that the real story is not that Isaac was supposed to die. It's that everyone is supposed to die. Me included, you included. You should be bound on top of an altar and it get burned and you're slaughtered in the honor of God because you are not worthy. But God provides. What does he provide? He provides his son. And as Jesus is hanging on the altar of the cross, there's not an angel that stops him and says, "You know, this doesn't have to happen," because that is our replacement standing on the cross. We're the ones who it didn't have to happen to, and God provides instead by putting his son on the cross, and he dies in our place. We are spared. Like Abraham and Isaac, God provides something different, but this time it's the perfect sacrifice. Because God has given us his son, provided everything we could ever ask for or imagine. He has, and he will provide everything we could ever ask for or imagine. We need not fear anything. We need not fear being generous. We need not fear even death with faith in the God who gives up his only son on our behalfs. And so as we begin this journey of generosity up the mountain, as we ascend towards the peak of Ridgeview Christian Church, we don't need to fear the journey of generosity. Because God provides, the journey of generosity is safe. And because God can and does and has provided, and God will provide. any journey of generosity is safe because God provides. So the question is, will you climb the mountain with me?